from WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
Happy Monday, ladies and gents. Yes, it's time to get back to work. Oh, boy, and it's the last week in August. Can you believe that? But hey, so glad you allow Current Sports to be a part of your Monday afternoon. We have a hot, hot show in store for you all. We're going to talk MSU football. Yes, we're less than about 4 days away now. Yes, Friday night. Friday night is when MSU football kicks off. We'll talk about MSU being the Big Ten favorites. Also, we'll give you our takeaways from the Lions and Jaguars game over the weekend. Also, the Tigers, Detroit Tigers, they split with the Minnesota Twins, and we'll run down the playoff picture for them right now, and we'll also give you our weekend winners. All of that and so much more. Our phone lines will be open this entire hour, but hey, as custom here on the show, he is back, ladies and gents. Yes, he's back from powwowing with all the celebrities and, you know, taking a dip on Venice Beach. He's back from L.A. Alex Sharg is back behind the glass. Here he is with your Current Sports Quick Hit Headliners.
Good afternoon and welcome back. I'm Alex Sharg and these are your Current Sports Quick Hit Headliners for Monday, August 25th. The Detroit Tigers played a four-game weekend road series against the Minnesota Twins this weekend. They capped off things yesterday, winning decisively 13-4, and in the game, slugger Victor Martinez hit a milestone. His two-run homer in the sixth inning, which gave the Tigers a 7-3 lead, was his 25th of the season. That matched his career-high stint in 2007 with the Cleveland Indians. Detroit trails Kansas City now by two games in the AL Central and is one game back of the Seattle Mariners for the second AL wildcard spot. There are 5 weeks left in the season. To Lions football, Reggie Bush's 86-yard touchdown gave the Lions an early lead, and they eventually came away with a 13-12 victory over the Jacksonville Jaguars Friday night. But Detroit also turned the ball over three times in the game and committed 15 penalties. Calvin Johnson played for the first time this preseason, catching two passes for 27 yards, and quarterback Matthew Stafford was intercepted once, and the Lions struggled in the red zone throughout the game. Jacksonville's Denard Robinson, a former star at Michigan, got a nice cheer from the crowd in the first quarter when he made a tackle on special teams. Team USA announced over the weekend that Detroit Pistons center Andre Drummond made the 12-man World Cup roster. He will join DeMarcus Cousins, Mason Plumlee, and Anthony Davis on the Team USA frontcourt. Team USA starters are Kyrie Irving, Stephen Curry, James Harden, Kenneth Faried, and Anthony Davis. The reserves are Derrick Rose, Klay Thompson, Rudy Gay, DeMar DeRozan, Cousins, Plumlee, and Drummond. The FIBA World Cup games start in 4 days. Michigan State will make the inaugural college football playoff this season, according to two of the three analysts on ESPN's College Game Day preview show on Saturday. Kirk Herbstreit and Lee Corso predicted the Spartans will face Florida State in a college football playoff semifinal, with Alabama and UCLA playing in the other one. ESPN College Game Day analyst Desmond Howard, a former Wolverine, predicted Florida State and Georgia to meet in one semifinal, and Wisconsin and UCLA in the other. Herbstreit said he changed his Big Ten pick after Ohio State quarterback Braxton Miller went down with an injury. In startling NFL news, former Heisman Trophy winner at Oklahoma Sam Bradford has been ruled out for the season due to a tear of his ACL. Bradford was making his second start of the preseason after returning from a season-ending torn left ACL suffered against Carolina last season in October. Bradford went 4 of 9 for 77 yards at last Saturday's preseason game before leaving Saturday's game. Golfer Hunter Mahan sealed the deal at the Barclays over the weekend. In the final round yesterday, Mahan pulled away with three straight birdies and sealed the victory with a 20-foot putt down the slope on a par 5 17th hole. He held off Jim Furyk, Jason Day, and Stuart Appleby to win the Barclays. In the WNBA playoffs, Brittany Griner went 9-for-9 from the field and led the Phoenix Mercury with Diana Taurasi to a two-game sweep on the Sparks in the playoff semifinal. Griner scored a playoff-high 21 points and also had a breakaway steal and dunk that made fans go wild. Last year's most valuable WNBA player, Candace Parker, led the LA Sparks with 21 points as well. And lastly, in some unfortunate soccer news, a Cameroonian soccer player in Algeria passed away after a rock was thrown at the player. Albert Ibose died in the hospital after the team's 2-1 loss and was the leading goal scorer last season in the Algerian Soccer League. The Algeria Football Federation and the Professional League both ordered emergency meetings over Ibose's death. And those are your Current Sports Quick Hit headliners for this Monday, August 25th. Time to send it back to Al to start the show. Lines are now open.
Thanks a lot, Alex, for those Quicket headliners. Again, our phone lines are open. If you want to call in and chat, discuss, debate about anything that is on your sports noggin, you know that number, folks, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. All right, folks, really quickly, some other headliners here that have just come through. Tiger Woods has decided to part ways with his swing coach, Sean Foley. That comes through about an hour or so ago. So Tiger is deciding to part ways with Sean and go a different way. Tiger needs all the help he can get, and I guess he felt as though Sean wasn't doing his job. So there you have that. Also, how about the Little League World Series, ladies and gents? What a weekend. What a weekend for the, I tell you what, for South Korea and both the Jackie Robinson West All-Star team from Chicago. How about that? I mean, it really, you know, it was great seeing and watching that game yesterday and watching both of those teams' runs to the World Championship game. Of course, South Korea coming through with that win yesterday afternoon around 3 p.m. Watched the entire game. And I tell you what, we've definitely had a discussion about baseball being a dying sport in the world of African Americans. And, you know, it really gives me some hope. And it gave me some hope watching the Jackie Robinson West All-Star team from Chicago, from Chi-Town, hold it down and get all the way to the World Championship game. Watching him yesterday gives me hope that, hey, baseball isn't completely dead in the world of African Americans. So there you have that. Fantastic stuff. Congrats to South Korea, though. They are a very, very, very talented team. And I tell you, you know, the Little League World Series, it brought a lot of attention this year also. I mean, with Monet Davis from Philly, you know, the first, you know, female pitcher, 13 years old, the first female pitcher to pitch the way she did. I mean, it was unbelievable. Unbelievable watching her. She certainly stole the spotlight and was the celebrity of the Little League World Series. Celebrities tweeting her left and right, from Ellen DeGeneres to Magic Johnson. Pretty cool to watch her, you know, just kind of put on a show. Game in and game out. I really wanted to see her in the final, but hey, you know, seeing a Chicago team like that, I mean, it was unbelievable. So those are our two headliners, two additional headliners for you. But folks, we have a fantastic show in store for you. Hopefully you all had a good weekend. And hey, Alex Sharrock is back, ladies and gents. He is back and we're ready to bring it. I held down the show all of last week while Alex was, you know, taking a dip in the beach and the sand and probably powwowing with a few celebrities here and there out in sunny Los Angeles, California. How was your trip, Alex?
Oh, it was great. You know, much needed before this hectic school year. And guess what? One night, and you'll be the first person to know this over the air, Al.
What was that?
I sat dinner next to David Beckham.
Get out of here,
in
really?
Los Angeles. It was great. I had no idea it was him. It wasn't until after, when I saw all the paparazzi, they were all waiting outside for him, and he didn't want to deal with any of it. So he just snuck out the back, him and his buddies, they just snuck out. Right. It was funny. But, you know, just bringing a little bit of sports back from L.A. with me, that was probably the best memory I had, celebrity-wise.
So how many tables down was he from you?
Two tables.
Are you serious?
Yeah,
I'm like, this is okay. You're eating pretty good out there, then, huh, man? If you're eating
actually, it was this Mexican cuisine place. Right. It wasn't really that high. He was just there with a buddy. I guess it was a really, really good place to eat at. It's not like I went to the steakhouse of L.A. I mean,
that's what I was. Yeah, David Beckham. He's just an average guy. No, that's great stuff, man. David Beckham. Eating dinner with
just
David Beckham, folks.
Yeah, how about that?
Oh, boy. I tell you what. Well, great to have you back.
The beach was great. Did a little beach football. Practiced my routes for the season.
Nice.
You know, I'm trying to walk on this year for the Lansing Stealth, maybe. So
are
we'll
you? The Capital City stuff. Okay. Yeah. We'll see how that pans out, man. Even though their season is winding down, but still, hey, for next year.
Yeah.
There you have that. Oh, that's a good stuff, man. Well, glad to have you back. Aaron did a great job of holding it down all of last week. Pretty busy week. Well, I tell you, this is about to be a crazy busy week. I mean, at the end of the week on Friday, we have, the opening day, opening night for MSU football.
Yeah.
That's exciting stuff against Jacksonville State. And then Thursday is the start of high school football right in here, right from around the area, here in Michigan. So I'll be actually doing my very first play-by-play gig with 92.1 Big Country with Eric Doc Love. I've never done it for football, so this might be my first football play-by-play game. I'm excited about it.
Great. Looking forward to hearing you over the air, man.
Definitely, man. So that should be exciting. And, of course, Mark D'Antonio holds his first weekly Tuesday press conference tomorrow morning at 11:30, so we'll be at that as well. So just a very, very busy week. I believe students start class on Wednesday here at Michigan State. Oh, boy, I tell you what, this summer certainly flew by, And I guess it's time to get back to work, ladies and gents. And I tell you what, a ton to talk about on today's show. Again, folks, our phone lines will be open. 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. Of course, later on, we'll give you our weekend winners as we try to recap all of the sporting action that took place, or most of the sporting action that took place this past weekend in the world of sports. And how about Andre Drummond making Team USA? How about that? I remember reading Vince Ellis's article, and actually but that was one of our headliners, that he felt as though Andre Drummond was not going to make this team at all. And, you know, lo and behold, over the weekend, he makes that 12-man roster, so he will be a part of Team USA going big this year, going big. I mean, he joins, guys like Mason Plumlee and DeMarcus Cousins. You know, he joins guys like that. You know, they now have a pretty beefy front court. So we'll talk about that as well, and also give you a throwback chat, a current sports throwback chat with Doug Wilson, who, authored a pretty cool book about one of the most interesting characters in Detroit Tigers history. So you don't want to miss that at all either. Again, our phone lines are open, 517-355-9527. So, Alex, let's just dive right into it, man. So much to talk about, so little time.
Right.
Really briefly, let's start the show off by talking MSU football. Of course, MSU football, as you just talked about, Kirk Herbstreit, the guys of College Game Day, other than Desmond Howard, who, of course, is a Wolverine. everybody else, Lee Corso and Herbstreit, predicts that MSU will not only come out of the Big Ten, but will make it all the way to the college football playoff semifinal. How about that? Now, Kirk Herbstreit, he predicts that the Spartans will face Florida State, with Alabama and UCLA playing in the other semifinal. And let's see here. Looking at Corso. Corso also predicted MSU will make it. And Desmond Howard, he predicted that Florida State and Georgia will meet in one semifinal, and Wisconsin and UCLA in the other. So, and Herbstreit did admit that he did change his mind in his Big Ten pick after Ohio State quarterback Braxton Miller got injured. So, I tell you what, last week is when this news broke, Alex. With this whole Braxton Miller injury taking place, it really changed a lot of people's opinion and made people look at just the Big Ten in a different light now. Because, you know, just that impact of the Braxton Miller injury, it's big. It's big because there were a lot of people out there, a lot of national writers out there, national college football analysts predicting that Ohio State was going to be the team to come out, or is going to be the team to come out. And many minds were changed due to Ohio State really not having a solid backup that they've seen in reps. You know, there's no Kenny Guyton on this team this season. I remember Kenny Guyton. I mean, last year Kenny Guyton was so good. It was like, you know, when Braxton would go out and they'd throw in Kenny Guyton sometimes.
It didn't even matter.
It was like they didn't even lose anything. But now, I mean, you have, two freshies here. Well, actually, one sophomore and one true freshman here. Redshirt freshman, I should say. And guys who haven't had a lot of reps, guys who many people haven't seen a lot, the confidence in an Ohio State team to now come out of the Big Ten has gone completely down for many people. And I guess, looking at it, you're talking about the Rose Bowl defending champions here, Michigan State is obviously the logical choice now to come out of the Big Ten. Now, the big thing for me, Alex, and I mean, now looking at what makes this season so different from other seasons for Michigan State, especially in the D'Antonio era, now that he has won a Rose Bowl now, is that you have these expectations off the bat for MSU, even nationally. I mean, you got guys like Kirk Herbstreit and Lee Corso picking you to go all the way, not even just to win the Big Ten, but to go all the way to the playoff. It's a lot of pressure now, a lot of pressure. And I really think this MSU football team, even though they're changing the tune here, and I mean that in this way, I think that, MSU had the best defense in the nation last year. Even though they lost some key pieces like Max Bulla and Darquez Denard and so on and so forth, Nikos Allen, guys that were key contributors to MSU being looked at as the number one defense, they haven't missed a beat, though, I don't think. I mean, you got guys who can come in and be contributors right off the bat. I don't know if they'll be as good as they were defensively, but they'll still be good. This Michigan State team is still going to be good. So that's why I say I think that even though they're changing a tune, they're still not missing a beat in that regard. And I feel as though, there's a lot of pressure. D'Antonio talks all about, handling success, how you handle success. It's all about how this Michigan State team handles success. It's more mental for this Michigan State team, I think, if anything. Because when you have all of these glowing and glaring expectations placed upon you to come out of the Big Ten, you got national guys picking you to make the playoff, I mean, this is different. It's you know, a D'Antonio team hasn't had this high expectations ever. I'm curious to see how they deal with it. That's going to be the key to their success this season, Alex.
Yeah, definitely dealing with it. There's one team in regards to being the favorites I want to talk about for a little, and that's Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Desmond Howard was the only ESPN game day analyst to pick Wisconsin and making that playoff and is the Big Ten favorite. Now, looking at Wisconsin's schedule, Al, and a lot of people are ignoring this, their first game of the year is at LSU. Very tough game. That's prime time, 9 p.m. in the lights. But after LSU, Al, they have, you know, three out-of-conference games against poor teams. And their Big Ten opponents, they don't play Michigan. They don't play Michigan State. They don't play Ohio State.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't play Wisconsin, and they don't play Penn State.
Yeah.
Their toughest game is at home versus Nebraska.
Right.
Their ease of schedule is laughable. I mean, they have the easiest schedule in the Big Ten from one of the five, you know, really good contending teams. And I think with that ease of schedule, they have the best odds of being the Big Ten champions this year. I mean, Michigan State, don't get me wrong, handling success, and, you know, they're coming back as the favorites. It's going to be pretty tough.
Well,
and I'd be very surprised if they come out with Ohio State, with Michigan, and Penn State not losing one of those games.
Well, I tell you what, I think that Michigan State has a pretty favorable schedule too, though, Alex. Other than, for me, looking at their schedule, kind of breaking it down here, they start off with Oregon, which I think, you know, that's hit or miss.
That's going to be hit or miss.
Yeah, that's hit or miss. I mean, if Michigan State beats Oregon, I mean, everybody's going to be talking about this team. The expectations are certainly going to go way through the roof if they beat Oregon. But that's a hit or miss game. But and they start off with a cupcake facing Jacksonville State. That'll be an easy win. You play Eastern Michigan University. That'll be an easy win. You play Wyoming. That'll be an easy win. I'm going down the line here. I think this Nebraska team is really going to be good.
Oh, sure.
This year.
Out of conference.
Nebraska's going to be good.
Mm.
So you play Nebraska. That's going to be a close game. Purdue, I don't think, is that good this year.
No.
I think they'll roll over Purdue. I think Indiana, Alex.
That might be an upset team this year.
Yeah, I think Indiana is going to surprise a lot of people this year. If you remember Indiana last year,
yeah.
They were an offensive juggernaut. They could put
30 points a game.
Exactly. They could put points on the board. The thing is, they were so bad defensively.
Yeah.
That's the thing about it. If you look at out of the 125 BCS teams, they were ranked 123 in the nation defensively. So I think, you know, there's definitely going to be some fine-tuning in that area. I don't think they'll be that bad on defense. They'll make some improvements. But I think this Indiana team is going to turn some heads, though. And another team I think a lot of people are kind of overlooking, if you will, I think is Maryland. I think Maryland's going to surprise some people, Alex. And the reason I say that is because if you look at Maryland's offense, they're returning 9 of their 11 starters on offense. I think looking at, you know, the body of work that QB C.J. Brown had last year, I mean, I thought he had a solid year as the year went on last year. I think a guy like Wes Brown, running back for Maryland, is going to turn a lot of heads. So I think, you know, and it's going to be interesting because you got Maryland and Rutgers now entering the Big Ten, and they're going to have to hold their own and prove that they belong. I think Maryland is going to do that without a doubt. But, you know, looking down the line, I think MSU's toughest games are definitely going to be against, of course, Oregon. But if you look at everything else, you know, Indiana, I think they'll roll over Michigan. Yes, I'm seeing that, Wolverine fans. Ohio State now with Braxton Miller, I think that'll be a win as well.
But not easy.
Not easy.
Still, although they don't have Braxton Miller, Ohio State probably still a top Big Ten team.
Right. They'll put up a fight, without a doubt. But I think in the end, MSU will close away. And then MSU plays in New East, in Maryland and Rutgers, which I think will be two wins. And they finish up with Penn State, who is not projected to be very, very good this year. So I think MSU coming off a Rose Bowl year, I mean, you would think that they would really be put to the test here. And I think games like, you know, playing in Ohio State against Braxton Miller, I mean, that definitely was going to be the game to see who the Big Ten's best would be. But I think MSU has a pretty favorable schedule, too, when you kind of narrow things down.
No, sure. They got Michigan, Ohio State at home. But look, I mean, Indiana might be their scare. They're going to be at Indiana. They're going to be at Maryland and at Penn State to end the year. As much as Penn State's had their fair share of woes, that's still a really good, predominant program that still pulls in top recruits. So they have a lot of guys coming back. Wisconsin, I mean, last year was the first year for their coaching staff with Gary Anderson. I mean, they're coming back really strong this year with an easy schedule. You're telling me that the toughest game they have is a home game versus Nebraska?
Yeah.
I mean, they're playing Purdue, Illinois, North. I mean, they have no hard games at all in the Big Ten Conference. Aside from their first LSU game, I think they might be able to sneak their way in just because of their ease of schedule if MSU has one woe loss against a Michigan or Ohio State.
I hear
something
you.
Like that.
But there's still questions on that Wisconsin team as well. I mean, I think that defense could have been a little better. Offensively, I don't know. I'm not sold on Wisconsin. I think, honestly, to be completely honest here, when I read that Desmond Howard chose, you know, Wisconsin.
I know what you're thinking.
You know what's going through my mind, right? I'm thinking, okay, he doesn't like Michigan State because he went to Michigan. He's a Michigan guy. You're bred to not like Michigan State. I think he was more so choosing with his heart and not his head. to be completely honest, but I see where he's coming from. But this is going to be interesting to see. It's going to be a fun Big Ten year, I think. What's so interesting about MSU? We're really diving into this, Alex, and you know, browsing through my media guide as I was so bored this weekend. But looking at some stats here, did you know that MSU, when scoring 20 or more points over the past four seasons, did you know they're 36-3? 36-3 while scoring 20 or more points. That's mind-boggling to me. And that's why I think having a guy like Connor Cook, who really game by game started to come on last year and put up big numbers, big throwing numbers as the year dwindled down. I mean, he had a few 300-yard games here and there.
Right.
Putting up big numbers that were well above the 20-point range. I think, looking at the proof, and, you know, I always say the numbers never lie here. That's a pretty glaring stat. I think if MSU is able to have the offensive efficiency that they're capable of having, I mean, you got some veteran wide receivers here. I think Jeremy Langford is going to be a breakout guy. Connor Cook is going to even get better this year. If those guys continue to play relatively consistent and get better this year, oh, man, I think MSU is going to be fine.
Yeah, no, it will break down more position breakdowns and the matchups against Jacksonville State, as the week goes on. But yeah. You're right. It really is a test for the returning players and Connor Cook and Jeremy Langford coming back.
The offensive line, most of those guys are coming back. The receivers, I'm interested to see because, you know, when you look at Mark D'Antonio's offense, historically it's been like kind of a more so run, kind of just pound it through the middle, you know, a lot of running. You rarely see D'Antonio. He'll do it sometimes, though. D'Antonio is very surprising with some of the schemes he draws up week to week, but you rarely see him just kind of take the leash off of QB and just let him go, let him fly. And I think he may do that a little bit this year. I think you're going to see that more than often this year, where you're going to see Connor Cook just kind of, you know, let him throw some deep balls down the field. Because I think, that, you know, this offense has the capability to put up big numbers down the field through the air.
Yeah. And, I mean, aside from that, Al, aside from, you know, the offensive numbers going through the air, the defense with Tywan Jones now taking the place, filling the void, you know, that's going to be a key position for them coming forward when you had one of the best linebackers in the Big Ten, too.
Right.
So, you know, the no-fly zone with Darquez now out, you have a lot of guys that are going to be filling in with Calhoun and Hicks. So, yeah, I mean, there are a lot of interesting positions to watch out for and a lot of success to match. We'll see. As you said, if the proof is in the pudding, Al, we'll see if they can do that.
Certainly. So I think and another thing that you can pretty much solidify that is going to be their special teams as well. We rarely give these guys a shout out, but hey, Mike Sadler and Geiger, those guys are great. You know.
Well, how about Tabor Pepper? I mean, he was one of the
that's another
with
guy.
His whole story,
right?
Getting the scholarship from Michigan State after he had he was going to walk on at Michigan. I mean, that's a guy who's is one of the best long snappers in the conference.
Yeah, definitely. MSU's going to be fine special team-wise, without a doubt. You know, for me, you know, I think that – what's San Antonio's motto this year? It starts here?
Starts here.
That's his motto. I'm going to ask him about that tomorrow because I feel as though I want to know what it is. I definitely want to dive into that a little bit. And I think my motto for this team, though, this year, Alex, is simply, quote, are they for real? Because when you come off a season like you had last year – there's many out there that feel as though it could have been a fluke. Maybe it was a fluke. Maybe MSU got lucky. You know, the stars just aligned for one year and, you know, they happen to get to a Rose Bowl. This year, you talk about, you know, showing that you are and proving that you are one of the nation's elite. You got to get there again, I think, to show to the world, to show to the nation that, hey, you know, hey, D'Antonio really has something special here in that, you know, they have a system here that is going to last for years.
And money talks. I mean, if you're paying the highest assistant coach paid in the Big Ten,
right,
they've got to show this year that it was worth them paying that money, too.
Yeah, definitely, without a doubt. Folks, if you want to weigh in on this, how good do you think this MSU football team is going to be this year? 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. 95-27. All right, before we hit the first break, Alex, briefly talk about the Lions and Jags. Of course, the Lions squeaking out a preseason win last week on Friday. Well, this past Friday, I should say. Reggie Bush had an impressive 86-yard TD and gave the Lions an early lead. Again, the final was 13-12 over the Jags on Friday night. You know, first of all, I guess I'll start with the good here, Alex. For me, going back to that 86-yard touchdown from Reggie Bush, watching that game on a Friday night, I mean, I was doing some work on my laptop, and I happened to, like, you know, look up, you know, when you hear the announcer start to go crazy. And I look up, and I see, you know, this guy just taking it to the house. And at first, I thought it was Joik Bell. I really couldn't tell until he got in the end zone, and he turned around, and I saw his jersey number and whatnot, and saw it was Reggie. Man, I mean, he looked like, you know, Reggie from the USC days. Reggie, the Heisman Trophy winner. I mean, my goodness. If Reggie Bush stays healthy, man, he's going to be a force. Him and Joik Bell are going to be quite a force. So I think the running backs are looking very well this preseason. I talked to you about this before the show, Alex. Tahir Whitehead. That's a name that I think you're going to hear a lot this season. Tahir Whitehead is a guy who, you know, they gave him the start at linebacker. The Lions gave him the start at linebacker. He took Ashley Palmer's starting spot. Kyle Van Noy was hurt this past weekend, so he didn't even play that game. So Tahir gets the start, and I tell you what, he just comes out of nowhere. I mean, he had 10 tackles. He had 3 sacks. I mean, it seemed as though every time you saw a dog pile happening where the Jacksonville Jaguars got stopped, I mean, it was Tahir Whitehead's name and jersey just painted all over it. I mean, he was unbelievable. I mean, I think he's going to be pretty special. If you look at last year, he actually played on the Lions special team star last year. Had a solid year, but this year, I think if he keeps it up, I think he can win that starting linebacker spot. He was impressive.
Yeah, and I know that they wanted to see him against the first teamers. You know, him being on the second team, he's played a lot of quote unquote easy competition. Mm-hmm. But yeah, as you said, he definitely proved his point and made his case to start. You know, a guy that can definitely break out. Teams don't really know him a lot yet. They don't have too many schemes trying to get specifically against a linebacker like that, which a lot of teams do. They really do have schemes against certain linebackers. But what I can say about Whitehead is that, I mean, that linebacker core is calling for an anchor. I mean, they're in desperate need for someone to anchor that linebackers, that linebacker spot. So definitely a lot of room to improve for him. My takeaway from the game, Al, was a lot of the things that they didn't capitalize on. They had a fourth down and goal, if you remember, from the 3-yard line.
Remember that one.
And if you remember last year, fourth downs and goals, that was not great. I mean, 1 for 3 in the red zone, not great stats at all.
Right,
so
exactly.
For me, as much as, you know, Stafford's poor drive and the penalties, for me, I'm even more concerned about the red zone conversions.
Yeah, I am too. That's a huge, huge concern. I totally agree with you, because last year, I mean, how many times did we come on the show on a Monday Monday afternoon and sort of recap what the Lions did on Sunday afternoon, and we would always talk about how many chances the Lions just blew in the red zone. So I definitely agree. That has to certainly clean up. And again, if you look at that linebacker spot, I think Tahir Whitey, again, if he keeps it up, he's turning a lot of heads. And one thing that really stuck out to me is that Jim Caldwell, as far as Tahir Whitehead starting at linebacker this game, Jim Caldwell made a point to make sure everybody knew that Tahir wasn't just given this because Calvin Noy was injured here and Ashley Palmer, you know, wasn't consistent. Tahir Whitehead earned his starting spot this past week. He earned that spot, and Jim Caldwell wanted to make a point of that. So he's working his butt off, and certainly the fruits of his labor are certainly tasting pretty good right now.
Now,
so
did you watch the whole game, Al?
I watched the whole game, yeah.
What were your thoughts on Houston and the secondary?
Houston, the Lions secondary?
Yeah.
Well, I tell you what, the Lions secondary, I mean,
that was another Achilles heel last year.
Yeah, they bent but didn't break. If you look at that secondary, Alex, Rasim Mathis and Issel Abdul Kudus, I always mess his name up, but they both had picks. There could have been pick six opportunities. Dropped. Completely dropped. And, you know, I think, you know, opportunities like that are golden. They have to start catching. If it's right between the numbers, if the quarterback messes up and throws an errant pass right between your numbers, hey, you got to catch that ball. And Rasim Mathis and Issel, they had glaring opportunities to do that. If you look at it, you know, James Ihegbo, he didn't play at all during that game, Alex. So he's resting up right now. So he didn't play and was not a part of that secondary at all. And you know what? I haven't seen much from, you know, and I was really upset, you know, of course, about the Lions draft and how they waited until about, what, the fourth round to draft a cornerback, and that being Nevin Lawson from Utah State. I think Nevin right now, reading the preseason reports on Nevin, he hasn't gotten a lot of playing time. He hasn't really impressed during his training camp at all. And, you know, a lot of, you know, reading some quotes from Rasim Mathis, who's kind of like the anchor for the secondary, Detroit Lions secondary. He's the leader of that secondary. He said that, you know, Nevin, you know, he's just got to kind of just settle down. He seems too anxious. You know, the game, sometimes for college players, when they come out of college, go from a college system to the NFL, they always talk about how fast the game becomes, the speed of the game. And that's something that Rasim said that Nevin has to catch up on. But I haven't seen much of him. So we didn't see, you know, we haven't seen much of Nevin, their draft pick, their only corner of the draft they drafted in this past draft. And you didn't see James Ihegbo, who is also a big part of that secondary. So you had to kind of take their performance with a grain of salt. But, again, they bit but didn't break. They didn't turn your heads and say, oh, wow. But they didn't also say, okay, well, they're we're going to be solid in the secondary. The Lions secondary is going to be average at best this season. It's just about guys, you know, continuing to get better from week to week to week. That steady week to week progression. So if I had to give a grade on their secondary this past weekend, I would say a C, an average C for me.
My takeaway from the secondary, aside from the C rating, they just haven't had a lot of balls thrown their way downfield, which is surprising to me because that might be the weakest point in the Lions' defense. And a lot of teams, you know, you're getting your systems down. It's a time to throw a lot of guys into the fire, just like the Lions did with Whitehead. Learn your offense, run the ball at the middle, see what the line does. But there really haven't been a lot of deep routes against Lions secondary. I mean, how many times last year did we see Bill Bentley get burned on a red zone pass?
So that's the thing
is we didn't see a lot of balls thrown their way downfield during this game. And that might be because Jacksonville may not have great receivers, as we all know, and their offense.
Shanahan's not a gunslinger,
right,
too. Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
So you could argue that side of it. That hey, I mean, Jackson, you know, they were really just experimenting in that game. Back.
Yeah,
so you know,
it's a preseason.
It's a preseason, like you said, and
it's something that I also saw, though, Alex. As far as Matthew Stafford goes, again, Matthew Stafford. You know, looking at that first drive, he began 1 for 5 and threw an interception. And the reason, one of the biggest reasons behind that 1 for 5 start for Matthew Stafford has to do with him sort of being a kid in the candy store once Calvin Johnson, this is Calvin Johnson's first game back, once he saw Megatron to his right, I mean, I felt as though he just got a little too antsy. I mean, he tried to force a lot of passes to Calvin Johnson, force a lot of things that we saw last year as well. I mean, how many times did Matthew Stafford try to force a ball to Megatron and end up getting picked off or something like that?
Yeah.
And we started to see it that game. So I think, again, Stafford has to realize if it's not there, I understand you got the best wide receiver in the game of football. But, hey, if it's not there, go somewhere else with the ball. Throw it away or something. I mean, don't put yourself in a position to get picked off. And that's exactly what happened. But after you saw, I think Matt did learn his lesson. After he sort of settled in, I mean, Matthew Stafford went 9 for 11. You know, he was pretty decent. He was pretty solid. He's been pretty solid throughout this entire preseason, if you ask me, up until that moment. So Stafford has to realize, even though you got the best in the game, you got to recognize when to take those shots and when not to. So, and again, and you talked about it, Alex. Again, the penalties, too. 15 penalties, that cannot happen. It happened last year. It comes down to one word.
It happened last game, too.
Yeah.
So many penalties.
Exactly. And that comes down to discipline. You know, that's about the discipline on your team. And you had Ndamukong Suh with the late hit. What do you think? Do you think it was a late hit? Because a lot of people are sort of debating that, too.
I mean,
his teammates are backing him.
Yeah. Well, they have to,
right? Yeah.
But, no, I think it was.
I think it was,
looking
too.
At the replay, it looked like you knew that he was down. And I mean, it's not one of those things before with his other late hits and penalties where he acts, you know, he's not looking at the player. He accidentally kicks his helmet.
Right.
This wasn't as accidental as I don't think people are making it out to be.
Yeah, he could have laid up. Nick Fairley, we saw Nick Fairley lay up that game, too. I mean, hey, and Sue could have ran by him or just brushed him off or something like
right.
that.
So but we'll see what his fine is. I think there's going
to
be one.
Yeah, definitely. So 15 penalties, Jim Caldwell is going to have to certainly assert himself in practice this week as far as those penalties go, because it comes down to discipline, and you got to separate those mental and physical mistakes. Period. It can't happen this year or the Lions going to be singing the same old song. All right, folks, if you want to weigh in on this, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Don't go anywhere. More Current Sports returns in just a sec.
Trouble so hard, don't nobody know my trouble but God. Don't nobody know my trouble but God.
Welcome back to Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin, on this Monday, August 25th, and we like to call it, or Alex likes to call it, Martis Monday, where we play music from one specific artist throughout our entire show here on Current Sports. And the catch is, the reason why we call it Martis Monday and not Artist Monday is because that artist's name has to start with the letter M. And today, of course, that's Moby. Gotta love Moby, as that group has some great music. Great music there. All right, folks. Well, really, really briefly here, you know, we always like to go back in time sometimes here on Current Sports and, you know, kind of highlight interviews that we've done and different guests that we've had on the show. And today we're going to go back in time to an interview that I had with Doug Wilson, who is the author of The Bird, The Life and Legacy of Mark Fidrich. Now, if Mark Fidrich, if that name rings a bell, I mean, he's one of the storied names in all of baseball, ladies and gents. Again, he played for the Detroit Tigers. His birthday, the reason why we're playing is because his birthday was right here in this month. Actually, it was earlier this month, August 14th. They actually had a little tribute. The Tigers had a little tribute to Mark Fidrich. He died in a freak accident. But I tell you what, he was named, his nickname was The Bird because he resembled, of course, the character from Sesame Street, Big Bird. So, but you know, he had these just different quirky things he would do, you know, before he came out on the mound. You know, he had these different antics on the field where he would sort of, you know, crouch down on the pitcher's mound and, you know, fix cleat marks, what became known as manicuring the mound. He would talk to himself. He would talk to the ball. He would aim the ball like a dart, strut around the mound after every out. He would, you know, sort of corral the dirt on the mound. I mean, he was certainly a character, folks. If you haven't seen any of his antics, I mean, it's certainly all over YouTube. But it was certainly a very beloved figure in all of Detroit sports. Again, Mark Fidrich, former pitcher for the Detroit Tigers. So I sat out with Doug Wilson, the author, again, of The Bird, The Life and Legacy of Mark Fidrich. It's just a great interview diving into just the life of the Bird. And I had to start off the interview by asking him what became his inspiration behind writing and starting this book.
Well, I grew up in the 60s and 70s following baseball, and looking back, I decided I wanted to write a book about one of the good things of baseball, something that made everybody feel good about themselves and about the game. And looking back, really, there's never been a phenomenon like what the Bird created in Detroit that year. Just the whole explosion of popularity. You know, by the end of the year, he was the most popular athlete in the country. Mm-hmm. And I was amazed that nobody had really written a book about it over the years. And I thought it'd be a good time to look back.
So during your research, Doug, I mean, who are some of the people that you talked to in your research for this book upon writing it?
Well, I started off with his sisters. He had three sisters. They were a close family, and they got me in touch with a lot of kids who grew up with him in the neighborhood just to find out kind of the background of his personality and some of his antics to see where that came from. And then I talked to his high school baseball coach and his American Legion coaches and quite a few guys who played with him in the minors and quite a few people that played with him in the majors, his catcher Bruce Kim, John Walkenfuss, a lot of the other pitchers, Frank McCormick, John Hiller. I was lucky enough to get a hold of Ralph Houck, his manager. He was 93 years old, living in Florida, and
wow.
He had a lot of interesting comments to say.
Wow. Now, for you, Doug, you did a lot of research with his family growing up. What did you find about Mark's family background to be like growing up?
Well, then the one thing that his sister said was, what you saw out on the mound, that's exactly the way it was in the house every single day. I mean, there was never a dull moment. He was just a guy with an endless amount of energy, always had a huge smile on his face, always into something. And, you know, his sister said our whole childhood was filled with trips to the hospital and bandages on Mark.
Ladies and gents, we're talking with Doug Wilson. Doug has a new book out called The Bird, The Life and Legacy of Mark Fidrich. Mark was an unbelievable legend, if you will, in Detroit Tigers history. Now many know about, you know, Fidrich's antics on the mound, like manicuring the mound, talking to the ball, throwing balls back with hits on them. I mean, where did those antics come from?
Well, the thing with the mound was really his father had taught him that, and in Little League, he just told him to make sure he was comfortable on the mound. Don't step in the other guy's hole. And most pitchers will do that with their foot, but Mark sort of took that to an extreme. And some yeah. of the other things, he was, you know, nowadays they would put him on medicine and call him an ADD. You know, he had difficulty being focused, and his father realized that. And some of the things he gave him to incorporate into a routine, talking to himself, telling him the situation, just helped him kind of lock in and concentrate.
Mm-hmm.
But when he got on the mound, he was totally oblivious to anybody else around watching him, and his enthusiasm and energy just took over, and he just did those things.
So, Doug, what many people deemed as quote-unquote weird, I mean, this is just how Mark was.
Yeah, yeah.
It was just a part of his DNA.
Yeah, and, you know, if somebody would make a play behind him, even just a routine play, you know, he'd be shaking his fist, pointing at him, grabbing him. And, you know, all the other guys on the team got into it. You would have thought that some of them would have been jealous with him getting the attention, but they all loved playing with him. He made the game fun, and they loved the crowds that started coming to watch him.
Mm-hmm. Right. Now, Doug, talk about Mark's career and when he first got his chance with the Tigers.
Well, he came up, he was kind of an unknown to most media and fans. You could do that back in those days. They didn't have all the internet and things to track people, but he had had a very good year in the minors the year before, but he was a non-roster pitcher in spring training in 76. He made the team. Hawk pitched him in relief a couple times to let him get his feet wet, and he didn't make his first start till about the middle of May.
Mm-hmm.
But when he took the mound against the Indians in Detroit, he threw a two-hitter, won the game 2-1. And the guys in the other dugouts, the guys in the press box started noticing that not only was he winning games, he was doing some pretty strange things out on the field. And over the next month, it just gradually built up. More people were coming out.
Now, so, Doug, I read that Mark was just such a popular player that opposing teams would sometimes even ask the Tigers if he would pitch on a certain day while on the road just to attract people. I mean, certainly a cultural figure. I mean, even the first athlete to grace the cover of Rolling Stone magazine. I mean, talk about his impact culturally.
Well, yeah, like you said, after halfway through the season, almost every game he pitched, there were 40 to 50,000 fans, home and on the road. He single-handedly outdrew four other teams for the season just in his 29 starts.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, the general managers knew if the Bird made an appearance in their park, that was a sellout that night. And so mm-hmm. they wanted them to juggle the lineup. But, you know, mm-hmm. everywhere he went, the fans were there. People were in the airport, grocery stores, hanging around his apartment. But he really loved it. He was just a guy who enjoyed connecting with people. And the fans could see that. And that's what kept making them come back.
Right, definitely. And also, Doug, I think we have a call from Kirk from Grand Ledge. He has a question for you, Doug. Kirk, how you doing, man?
I'm doing just fine, thank you. This is the first time I've had a chance to call into your show. I was a regular caller with Earl. I just wanted to verify or maybe validate what he's saying about Fidrich drawing fans. I grew up 26 miles south of Tiger Stadium, and in 1976, the Tigers stunk. They were a very bad baseball team.
Mm-hmm.
And the only time we went to Tiger Stadium that year was when Fidrich was pitching. And it was amazing the amount of energy that was generated when he was on the mound and how the players around him, even though they were pretty mediocre players, responded. We went and saw him at Tiger Stadium, I think, four or five times, and it was an event every single time. And I dare say, he may have outdrawn the rest of the Tiger team when they were at Tiger Stadium. If it wasn't Fidrich pitching that place, you could have shot a cannon off in it. But on the night he was there, it was standing room only.
Kirk, have you seen anything like that in baseball today?
No. You know, there are some young players right now that draw an awful lot of excitement and attention, like the Bryce Harpers and maybe a Mike Trout or whatever, but nothing like Fidrich. I mean, maybe it's because the difference was that Fidrich was a pitcher and not an everyday player, so you only got a chance to see him every 4 days.
Mm-hmm.
But it was an amazing phenomena. It was I was a senior in high school, or it was after I graduated from high school before I went to college in 1976.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just awesome to be there, be part of that.
Oh, man, I'm sure. And I wish I had a time machine now. Well, Kirk, hey, thanks a lot for your call. Really appreciate it, man.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Wow, Doug. I mean, that's just a firsthand, you know, recollection of, you know, the impact that that Fitrich had back in the day. Now, Doug, what was Mark's lifestyle like away from baseball?
Well, he was pretty famously casual. He was from a real small town in Massachusetts, and after his first big game, People Magazine sent a reporter over to his apartment, and you know, they reported to the country he had sheets hanging on the windows instead of curtains. He was sleeping on a mattress on the floor, didn't have a bed, didn't have a telephone, didn't have a TV. He told the reporter, he said, "Yeah, I'm usually clean, but every now and then I let my dishes stack up, but they don't get too high because I only have four." And so he was happy just living a simple lifestyle, and you know, he was making the major league minimum, $16,000 a year, which is pretty unbelievable nowadays looking at the salaries. But the reporters asked him, you know, "You're drawing $500,000 every game. You should be getting more money." And he told him, "What do I want more money for? 2 years ago, I was making $2 an hour at a gas station. This is more than I ever had."
Wow.
And you know, he was happy with that. He didn't get an agent. He negotiated his contract by himself. And, you know, he was loyal to the Tigers. And, you know, fans ate that up. That was what they wanted to hear at the time.
We're talking with Doug Wilson. He has a new book highlighting Mark Fitrich's life. Fitrich was, of course, a Detroit Tigers pitching legend back in the day. They nicknamed him the Bird. Doug's book is called The Bird, The Life and Legacy of Mark Fitrich. So, Doug, now Mark was injured. He injured his knee in 1977, an injury that he worked through, but it was when he injured his rotator cuff that really hindered his career. When he got his shoulder repaired, did he ever talk about returning back to the game?
Well, you know, one of the frustrating things was when he hurt his arm. That was before the days of MRIs and things like that, so they didn't really know he had a torn rotator cuff, and so he tried for about 5 years to come back. You know, he tried everything, all kinds of hokey diets, medicine, hypnotism, but after he had finally retired, about 2 years later, he went down to Dr. James Andrews, and by then they could do arthroscopic surgery, and they found the rotator cuff and fixed it, but by then he had been out of baseball 3 years. He was 33, and you know, his life had moved on, and so it was too late.
So, what was life for him like after baseball?
I was actually pretty good. Again, when he was a young kid, on top of the world, he had always told reporters he liked trucks, he liked fiddling with engines, and he wanted to be a farmer. Of course, they thought, you know, that's just more evidence of him being a nut. But when he got out, that's exactly what he did. He had saved some of his money. He bought some nice land in the small town that he lived in, raised pigs. He got a big dump truck, and he was basically a blue-collar worker. Get up at 5 in the morning, go haul asphalt and gravel all day, come home, work the pigs. And he was happy.
Wow.
He loved it. He married a girl from his high school, had a daughter, and you know, and he spent a lot of time doing charity work. He was always happy to put on his Tigers hat, get out and meet people, and he never really expressed any bitterness for his injury or what happened.
Now, for you, Doug, when looking at Mark's life and putting together this book of yours, what do you think for you is the most fascinating part of his life when you were going through the process of putting this book together?
Well, again, that whole attitude. Of not being bitter. You know, if you look at it one way, he missed the free agent era, and by 2 years, he would have made millions.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he missed the diagnosis and being able to fix his arm by 2 to 3 years. If they had fixed it, he could have had a 15, 20-year career. But, you know, he never looked back and felt bad about that. He always just told everybody he was happy for what he had and happy for what it got him. But, you know, the other surprising thing is like what the caller mentioned, is you talk to people now, there's really, it's hard to explain the phenomena of being in a ballpark when he was there because there's nothing to compare it to.
Right.
You know, people talk about Linsanity a few years ago, and you know, just say he made Linsanity look like a church bingo party. I mean, you had 50,000 people just on their feet screaming nonstop the whole game.
Right.
Every single game when he finished, they called him back out. You know, in a midseason game for a fifth place team, they called him out for curtain calls every single game.
Wow!
And you know, there's nothing to compare it to because there hasn't been anything like that since.
Even Lin, I remember when Linsanity was taking off, man. I mean, everybody was talking about Jeremy Lin. You said that made a church bingo party is what you compared it to.
You know, everybody said it was just a massive two-hour party every single time he took the mound.
Wow. But like I said, I wish I had a time machine to go back. Ladies and gentlemen, we're talking with Doug Wilson. He has a new book highlighting Mark Fidrich's life. Mark Fidrich's a legendary Tigers pitcher back in the late 70s. Doug has a new book out highlighting Mark's life entitled The Bird, The Life and Legacy of Mark Fidrich. So, Doug, for you, let's look at Mark's death now. Now, he passed away in 2009. Now, there are reports that say he was working on a truck one day when his clothes got tangled in a certain part of the truck, ended up suffocating him. Really a freak accident. Is that accurate? Is that what happened?
Yeah. And, you know, I didn't go into real great detail in the book, mainly because I just felt like I wanted to concentrate on how this guy lived and not how he died. But,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was just he got up one day, just like any other day of his life. He was working on his truck by himself at home that day, and part of his clothes got tangled in the rotary part of the engine, and, you know, it was over in a minute or less. And, yeah, it was really a shock to everybody who knew him. Of course, his family, you know, that's something you never get over.
Wow, unbelievable, man. So what do you think Mark's legacy is, Doug?
Again, a couple things. One is a guy who came along when baseball really needed it because the game was flagging. The game was dropping in popularity. He came along and made the game fun. He just enjoyed it. And then also a guy who gave back to his community, who was always willing to do charity, who always had a positive attitude after he got out of the game. And that's something that, you know, a lot of modern players could look at that as a role of how to be remembered.
All right. Gotta love that, I tell you. Again, that's a throwback chat I had with Doug Wilson, who is the author of the outstanding recollection of former Tigers pitcher Mark Fidrich. Well, I tell you, he was one of the great characters in all of sports. Okay, folks, let's hit our second break. When we come back, we'll have a brief weekend winners for you. We'll try to recap who we think is our, you know, Eye of the Tigers of the weekend, okay? You don't want to miss that. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. Well, we have about 5 minutes left in the show. It is time for our weekend winners. Oh, man, does not that guitar riff get you amped up? I tell you what, Eye of the Tiger, one of my favorite songs of all time. We're playing that because we're going to give you our weekend winners, taking a look back at all of the sporting action that took place this weekend. So much took place. I want to give you our weekend winners, who we thought had the best weekend of everybody. You know, who had that Eye of the Tiger throughout this weekend. So I guess I'll start off, Alex.
Okay,
I'll start this off. I got to go with the Jackie Robinson West All-Stars. They were so good. I mean, again, as I said to start the show, I mean, they gave me some hope. And I don't know how many times I said it on the show.
But they gave me some hope that baseball is not completely dead in the black community. Shout out to Jackie Robinson West All-Stars, an all-black team, actually. The first time that's happened in quite some time to make it all the way to the Little League World Series Finals. Hats off to Jackie Robinson West All-Stars. So that's one for me. Go ahead.
Great. And, you know, speaking of not even just dying in the African-American community,
yeah,
but another sport that many say are dying is women's basketball.
Yeah.
And how about Brittany Griner in the semifinals of the WNBA playoffs? Did you even know the WNBA playoffs were going on?
Oh, I did. I watched some of it. Okay. I was so bored this weekend, Alex. Let me tell you, all I did was just watch sports all weekend.
Wow.
So, it was a good weekend.
Good.
But yeah, I mean, she was unbelievable.
I personally forgot about the WNBA playoffs completely. I mean, when was the last time you saw, aside from Brittany Griner, any WNBA action on SportsCenter?
Yeah,
I mean,
that's true.
Come on. I mean,
that's true. Over the weekend, they kind of covered
9 for 9.
Yeah.
Diana Taurasi had a horrible shooting performance, but she still held it together.
Griner had a dunk, too.
Breakaway dunk with the steal. Oh, I watched the replay.
Yeah.
That was smooth, man.
It was
so
nice.
Props to Brittany Griner. I mean, taking the Phoenix Mercury team, which doesn't really have much tradition
right.
when it comes to the WNBA, beating the L.A. Sparks, who really defines the NBA, WNBA.
Yeah. That's a good one.
That, for me, was a special moment.
That's a good one. Okay, yeah, definitely. Yeah, Brittany Griner, she was spectacular. And I see, half the reason, too, I knew what was going on is because it's Streak for Cash, too. ESPN Streak for the Cash. They always said, okay, the NBA playoffs, you think he's going to win, blah, blah, blah. So, all right, good stuff. That's good stuff. She was also on my list. Brittany Griner was my number two. So I'll go number three. Tahir Whitehead. Detroit Lions fans, I think Tahir Whitehead is serious. I think he's a guy and he's a name that you're going to be hearing a lot this season. Again, he had 10 tackles, 3 sacks in the Lions preseason game on Friday night against the Jacksonville Jaguars. Man, I think he may be a starting linebacker for this Detroit Lions team. So that's one of them right there. You got any more, Alex?
Yeah. How about Miguel Cabrera getting a day off? Good for him. I mean, that guy holds the lineup together.
Yeah.
The Tigers still came back on Sunday when they were dreading with pitchers. I mean, you know how many guys have made their major league debuts this year for the Tigers?
Yeah.
It's absurd. They have about 10 pitchers that have made their major league debuts, or even 3 or 4 of them over the last 2 days.
Right. That's
so
true.
Good that Miguel Cabrera had a day off. Rest up that ankle, buddy.
But the thing
Tigers
is,
still held them together.
The thing that's so crazy about Mickey is, I mean, he injured that ankle I believe it was Saturday night. Yeah, Saturday night, running to first base. So, yeah, the weekend wasn't too kind to him. But, yeah, I'm glad he got – definitely glad he got the rest. And last but not least, Beyonce. Beyonce Knowles. My goodness. You know what? I tuned in last night to the Video Music Awards, and it was a pretty solid award show. And at the end, they gave a great tribute to Beyonce. And Beyonce, she's actually the recipient for the VMAs for the Michael Jackson Video Vanguard Award. And she had a 15-minute performance, Alex. 15 minutes of Beyonce. It was almost like she did her entire concert last night. She was spectacular. She was spectacular. So, congrats. If you haven't seen the performance, it was one of the best performances I've ever seen at an award
show. I
got to
check it out.
Definitely check it out. It's probably all over YouTube. So, hats off to Beyonce. She's outstanding. All right. Thanks so much to all of you for tuning in to today's Current Sports. Again, you've been listening to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, on WKAR East Lansing. As always, take care. Have one fantastic Monday. And, hey, be easy, people.